Blog Talk Radio.
So scared of getting older, I'm only good at being young. So I play the numbers game to find a way to say that life has just begun.
Good morning, all, and welcome to Who You Calling Old. I'm Shemaine Canton, and I am going to jump right into this morning because we've got a great author on the line, author and attorney, Jeff Rasley, and he has his book, Godless, Living a Valuable Life Beyond Beliefs, which I happen to think, as many people do, is extremely important now, as we have so many things popping up lately. Turned on the news this morning, Terror Group is telling people to go after malls, and we got ISIS, we got this stuff. Don't say Islamic, don't say this, don't say that. Just a lot of things that are going on. And the thing is that I love the most about what Jeff has to talk about is replacing these religious doctrines and political ideologies with pragmatic, humanistic values. Now that's what it all boils down to. Because when everybody gets cut, it's all red. Doesn't make a difference. So good morning, Jeff. You are like the perfect guest for all this fun stuff we had that's been going on.
Well, hey, Shemaine. Good to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
I love having you. You're very articulate and extremely, obviously, a very empathetic person. Having been a lawyer for 30 years, I give you credit, because you have seen the top and the bottom.
I did. I represented clients from Fortune 500 companies and CEOs to crack babies and mothers of crack babies and everything in between.
Amazing. But so, you know, so it's that's kind of the same thing that we get when we talk about anybody, when you talk about people who have careers that are that deal with people, particularly in, like, for instance, in the field of law enforcement, things of that nature, and the same thing goes with hospitals. You get to see people at their worst, at their best, and everything in between.
Yeah, you really do. And, you know, on the one hand, it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to help people that need your help. On the other hand, it's often very frustrating because you can see the mistakes that people are making that have gotten themselves down a wrong path in life. And even when you can show them a new direction, unfortunately, too often, too many people just refuse to operate on positive values.
And that's a real shame of it all. I mean, it's really, it just really kind of is a bit disheartening. I know that we at one point, you know, when we go back in time and we think about the 1940s and World War II, World War I, the world was really a very much a separated place. You know, America was America, Europe was Europe. Everything, to get to these places, people took boats for weeks and weeks to get somewhere else. Now, not only do we have different, you know, quicker modes of transportation, we also have the internet that connects us to people who are a world away from us. So that now you can have more, in one way it's positive because you have more of a global community, but at the same time, you now have an opportunity to have a larger platform for things that aren't good. And we've been seeing quite a bit of that lately. And I just wanted you to talk about that because I loved that you have that one particular line that I want to make sure everyone hears, that beliefs divide us, values unite us. And what's your take on what's happening with all these things that are going on, you know, the ISIS and whatever else there is out there?
Right. Well, that's one of the major concerns the book addresses. And probably the most dangerous formula there is for mass murder on a global scale is where you have a movement led by a charismatic leader which uses beliefs or an ideology to, this may be a bit strong, but to brainwash followers, or at least to get followers to go in lockstep and, like I said, down a wrong direction where positive values are not followed, but instead destructive values are followed. And ISIS is a perfect current example of, you have Baghdadi, the self-proclaimed caliph, is attracting all these followers to this extremist, radical version of Islam that tells them they can kill, torture, enslave, rape other human beings with impunity because those other human beings do not share these orthodox, correct beliefs.
Right. And that's an interesting thing to do. Because, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, we go back to, going back to World War II, and you talk about Germany underneath Hitler and the way he came in. Now, he had a direct audience, and he spoke this particular rhetoric right there. Now we have the same people, same type of thing going on, but it's not contained to a region. It's now, it can be spewed everywhere.
Yeah.
And it makes it completely different.
And what at least the news media tells us is that ISIS is drawing followers from all over the globe, from the U.S., from Europe, all over the globe. And, you know, that's certainly, in this case, a downside to the Internet and global Internet.
It's the truth. That's the truth, though. I mean, honestly, they are able to recruit people. But there's an interesting thing I wonder about that, though. When you talked, your book is really, I mean, I recommend it to everyone, honestly, because it's really, you make such a great case. Honestly, I really think they should send it to Washington, to the Beltway. Because everybody wants to argue about how you, I mean, you can't say anything these days. You just can't say anything. If you say it a particular way, because the fact of the matter is, if you have an experience with one particular person, a person that's of a particular race, religion, whatever, and it's that one person, you cannot then just broadly brush over the entire religion, race, whatever, that they're all that way. So you're walking this particular line, and in Washington, that line is always crazy. It's like if you even get, you're off in a verb or something, and they hop all over that verb. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, what we can see is one of the problems with how Washington, particularly Congress, is functioning or not functioning recently.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Is because the politicians are approaching issues from belief or ideological perspectives rather than from value perspectives. And if you'd accept the methodology of my book, if congressmen and women would start their conversations with thinking through what are the common values at stake here. You can take almost any issue, and right-wingers, left-wingers, centrists are actually going to agree, for the most part, on the fundamental values at stake. And so if they started the conversation with, you know, what do we really care about? What's at stake here? They'd recognize we actually have pretty much the same values, and then if they would move out from there, rather than sort of dividing up along ideological sides, forgetting about beliefs and concentrating on facts and reality, and look at problem solving pragmatically, like, you know, what will work? What's the solution to this problem now that we recognize we really have basically the same values? Let's just approach it like a doctor seeing a patient. It's a problem to solve. Let's diagnose it, figure out a practical solution, and move forward together. You know, and instead, the conservative Republicans, liberal Democrats, they always divide up along these ideological lines, and then it's a contest of these competing ideologies rather than people trying to find common ground on which they can unite.
And that doesn't, you know, and you're completely right about it. You're completely right. And what's amazing to me is that this country itself was based on the idea of coming in and being able to have freedom of speech, freedom to choose the way you worship, what goes. These are all these basic freedoms that we had and that we have in this country that other people came to, that people were drawn to come over. And now we're sitting here in the middle of it, and for lack of a better term, and I know it's like, you know, 10 in the morning, and I don't think this is this much of a bad word, but it suddenly turns into a pissing match of ideologies. And it's ridiculous, because at the core of it is just what people are. We're all human beings. No one steps into their pants any differently. You got one leg into the other. Maybe you might be one of those cute people who can do two legs at a time or whatever like that, but for the most part, you're stepping into the pants the same way. Everybody. So it's just,
yeah.
You know, nobody's doing, you know, I mean, you know, we're not pulling David Copperfield. Even he steps in his pants regularly, okay? They don't float on or whatever. That's all magic and light and mirrors. But that's a whole other, you know, that. But we're losing sight of that and really concentrating on just these ideologies, which in to what I've seen, what I look like, are fueling things like ISIS and things like that. It fuels them.
Yeah, well, we are called the United States, and we put on our coins, E Pluribus Unum, and yet it seems we're more interested in fighting amongst ourselves rather than recognizing our common interests and common goals. And, you know, divided we fall. Divide and conquer.
And
That's true.
And what's interesting about it is that, you know, the kids were off last week. Last Monday was President's Day. And, you know, we concentrate particularly on Washington and Lincoln. And when you go back to Lincoln, and they will say arguably probably the best president that ever was ever right now as it stands, he was in office in a time of incredible upheaval within the country's borders over slavery, and he had his own thoughts about things, but he was able to find some way to rise above that. Now, we'll never know what would have happened had Wilkes Booth not been a little bit worse of a shot. What would have happened? Everyone assumed that the South was going to pay dearly or whatever it was at the time. Nobody knew what he had planned in order to reunite the country and so forth. And it's something we don't know. And then, you know, and then the vice president that came in afterwards, he pretty much, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he the first one impeached?
Right. Although the impeachment failed by one vote.
It failed, but that's what they tried to do with him. He really was not prepared. He was not equipped. He wasn't equipped for it at all.
Yeah, and he ended Reconstruction way too early before the process of reconciliation was allowed to, you know, to progress to the point where Southerners could accept citizens, and where African Americans were, you know, fully integrated into society and ready to play their full part as citizens. I mean, that sort of thing takes time.
And well, and you're right. It does take a lot of time to get that to have that happen. You've got to. It does take time, and you've got to give it the time to let it happen. But a lot of them just don't. They don't do it. You know, it's just it didn't happen then, and nobody seems to understand that some of these things that were supposed to have been solved for us way back in, you know, at the end of the Civil War. Literally, I mean, the Civil Rights Act is 50 years old this year, and the end of the Civil War is what? How many years ago now? At this point,
1864. So, do the math.
Yeah, here we are.
It's been a while.
It's been quite a while. But at the same time, you're sitting there dealing with, okay, well, we see what's happening. We know what's going on. And no one still is, and then everybody is still caught on these little, you know, they're kind of caught. I don't really know what it is. Every time I watch it, I go, oh, my God, I don't understand. Stop. Can you just shut up for 2 seconds and listen to what you're saying? Because the fact of the matter is that we're all people. Put your ideology aside. Put what your political agenda, or, you know, and I have nothing against anybody's religions or what have you, how you choose to worship, that's all up to you personally. But put that aside and start looking at people, and as you said, that humanistic value more than anything.
Well, if you think about what are the fundamental political values, political social values, it pretty much breaks down to equality and freedom. And doesn't everybody want, you know, some degree of equality when we mean equal opportunity? Doesn't everybody want some degree of personal freedom? You know, every human being values that. You know, you value being a member of a community that's healthy, where people can be productive. That's a quality of opportunity, or that's the end result of it. But we also want to have our own freedom to grow and progress at our own rate, to strive to be the best we can be, express ourselves creatively. That's the end product of freedom. And we all want that. We all want a combination of those. So it's just, you know, fundamental politics is a matter of finding that balance. And again, like I said before, if we start those discussions with, look what we have in common. You know, we all value equality, freedom. Now, how do we find that balance? And that becomes a lot easier problem if we start it that way, as opposed to, okay, here's my ideology, I'm a socialist, or I'm a capitalist, or I'm a liberal or a conservative, and that's what I have to push. You've already divided the world into separate competing interest blocks.
Right. We really have. You really have, and that's what you've done. I'm always amazed about that, because in a way, my fiance is always saying to me, he says, you really love that whole idea that, you know, I'm one of those classics readers and what have you, and I kind of am fascinated with the Gilded Age. And the reason that I have such fascination when it comes down to this has more to do with the fact that I feel like, wow, it's incredible to me that people that, you know, at the time that social divide, the social wasn't just a social, but it was a social and economic divide that we're seeing now. even now we still see this thing. And you have to sit back and say to yourself, oh, my God, we are, like, totally screwed. When you think of it, that's how I feel about it to some extent, because it's just kind of gotten that way. And they're trying to cover it up, make it sound like it's not that way. But the fact is, maybe it's not John D. Rockefeller. Maybe it's not J.P. Morgan. It's not them. It's not them anymore, okay? It's not the Vanderbilts. It's not any of these people. Not them anymore. Other names that you and I don't, that we don't know all the names that are sitting in that top 1 or 2% that are controlling everything else. That's what it was like in the Gilded Age. These guys actually walked into the White House with money and all kinds of stuff, and they bought their way to whatever they wanted. And in a weird way, we kind of had that again, in a way, surreptitiously, in Citizens United. It's like these kind of dark packs that come along.
Exactly.
And, you know, and want to push their agenda. And I have to give you credit because, you know, the thing is, you ran a business as an attorney for 30 years successfully. And I know you had high, you had low, you had in between, the whole nine yards. Yet you still see what it's about when it comes down to equality. And I know that, you know, I share something with your wife in terms of having MS and what it does and what these diseases. It's not just MS. There are many other diseases. And it's not fair to sit there and say, well, we want to repeal whatever and go back to this other system that considered things like pregnancy a pre-existing condition. I mean, you know, like, oh, we're not going to cover that because it's pre-existing. Excuse me. You know, that kind of thing. And there's no human there. Now you're talking pure dollars. And as soon as you get into pure dollars, you get into this weird, weird, weird area.
Yeah, well, despite all its problems, the ACA allowed my wife to get health insurance at a reasonable cost for the first time since she was diagnosed with MS.
And it is expensive.
There are tens of thousands of people in that situation who had what are called pre-existing conditions, and if they ever had a break in their coverage, or if they just had to get individual coverage as opposed to being in a group plan, they were screwed. That problem has been solved.
Yeah. It's been solved, and then somebody wants to run and go, oh, yeah, a friend, my son has a friend they went to college with, and they, you know, they go back and forth. The political thing between the two of them are different. He's from upstate New York. We're downstaters, and the tendency is with downstaters, we tend to be Democrats. It's like a huge number of us down there. But the further up you go in New York, you'll find more Republicans and those kinds of views. And he had posted something about the repeal and this, that, and the other. So my son sent him he sent this thing out. So he made a comment to him, and he says, listen, hey, it's great. If you have a job that offers you health insurance and this, that, and the other, that's great. It's wonderful if you've got that kind of thing. But there were a lot of people who didn't have that opportunity, did not have coverage offered to them. And he says, now, if you just happen to have been somebody, say you have a friend that, you know, if they didn't have it, you know, and say you have a girlfriend or whatever and she gets pregnant and you want to carry on with the pregnancy, saying what have you, you can't get her covered for the pregnancy. Why? Because it's a pre-existing condition that doesn't apply anymore. So if you're going woo, 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 yeah, rah, 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 you know, repeal this stuff to go back to what it was, it's kind of like saying, listen, I want to go from the Beamer to the Model T. How do you feel about that?
the Republican approach has been completely ideological. excuse me, it's been, you know, anti-Obama, the ACA, going to be Obama's legacy, so attack, attack, attack. The creation of the ACA, with all its problems, it's not perfect, but it was approached like I was describing before. You had a bunch of experts get together, look at this issue of uninsured people, millions of them throughout our country for many different reasons, but they looked at that as a problem to be solved, and through a lot of work, they came up with this solution. Now, the Republicans could have gotten involved. They could have offered alternative plans. They could have criticized particular parts and offered particular amendments. Instead, they took, and they continue to take, a completely ideological approach to it rather than a problem-solving approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I don't belong to either party. I'm sort of agnostic on all things until I believe, think that I know what the truth is. But I don't see how anybody can look at the record of the Republicans in response to the ACA and think that they are acting responsibly.
That's true. And, you know, honestly, I subscribe to a party myself. And in a way, what I try to do is educate myself at all times. I'm an extremely politically active family. My father was always involved in politics when I was a kid, when I was growing up and what have you. And I have a whole family full of people that are just way out there doing that kind of stuff. Hell, my mother was at the March on Washington. So, yeah, that kind of thing. My father was arrested with the rest of those students there and when they went to Morgan, when in Baltimore, when they went to that theater, the movie theater in Baltimore. My father was one of the college students arrested back at that particular point. But what I like to do, my father's always made a point of is telling me to be educated about what it is that they're trying to sell you. He goes, I don't care which party it is. You never want to go in there and just pull a lever because you're just, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're this, so just pull that lever. Don't do that.
Yep.
Read up, find out what's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got a wonderful legacy.
Oh, I love it, too. And I will tell you one thing. Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off. I'm so sorry.
No,
but it is fun. All I have to say is Mark Twain was right. The older I get, the smarter my father gets.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince my two boys of the truth of that statement. They're still a little skeptical.
How old are your sons?
They're in their mid to late 20s. 28,
oh,
20,
yeah,
you're
going to have fun doing that one.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have fun doing it, too. What have you?
I've got
my two, and, you know, my sons will be 28 in May. I had the twins. I did the one-shot deal. I got two kids out of one pregnancy, and I was cured. I felt like I hit the jackpot. And I said, you know what? I know how to, you know. I felt like Kenny Rogers of The Gambler, you know. Got to know when to hold them, when to fold them. Walk away and when to run. I had two kids at one time. I walked away from the table. Said, done.
Two is the right number, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's a great number, and I love it. And I really have to say to you that you really are somebody who's doing the thing. And I want you to know that I've been reading the things that you'd sent me before, and I'm just kind of like doing a little bit of I'm on recognizance right now. I always do recognizance. I have to because, you know, as you know, I'm an agent, so I have to do recognizance. Sometimes it takes me forever to do that. Because I have to read the temperature of the industry. And when I'm trying to read the temperature, I have to look at, I have to see who's doing what and who's doing that. I mean, because sometimes you have people who are not getting contracts or different things like that. Has nothing to do with their talent, has nothing to do with the value of their book or what they've done or anything at all. It really just has everything to do that with them not knowing how to compete in the new age of the e-book and the this and the that and the other. So you just have to really, really pay attention. I mean, I'm looking right now, and I would love to put you on something like, you know, I would love to put you on the same out with the people who publish Coulter, because I can't stand her. But I would love that, because she did that godless nonsense herself. Oh, I just would love you to be the antithesis of her. And I said,
yeah,
oh,
I mean,
my
it's
God.
Like, she uses buzzwords, but she approaches everything from an ideological point of view and a very negative, divisive, kind of demeanor, and she's nasty. And so instead of promoting the things she claims to believe in, freedom, equality, she divides people.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, I think what really works for her, and I really don't want to say it quite like this, but, you know, when you put it in a package of, you know, kind of tall, fairly attractive blonde, you know, but this, you know, she can have all kinds of things come out of her mouth.
Yeah, although the attractive part in her case,
I'm not even on the fence on that one. Okay, because she kind of reminds me a little bit. Every time I see her, she reminds me of a horse. She kind of reminds me of a horse. It's terrible. Am I terrible, please?
To drop even further downstream, I was going to say skank, but I wouldn't
like
use a term
words.
Like that on air, would I?
Oh, goodness. Well, I wouldn't do that. Yeah, I'd use it. Shoot. I like it. I thought, good grief, what kind of crazy this is. This? But she's found a little niche with people are willing to sit there, and she says things in a particular way. She's educated, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. Wonderful. So you're educated and you can say like that. Does not mean that you're not spewing crap. It's, you know,
yeah,
with big words. With big
words,
but who cares?
You know, there are some people that think that what she's doing is it's a show. It's that she doesn't really believe what she's spewing. She recognizes this is a way that she's gotten a platform. It's made her famous, and will continue to make her famous, which means make money. And so it's an act. I don't know if that's true or not, but
it's a truth.
It kind of makes sense.
Oh yeah. That's the truth. I mean, I can completely understand why this works with her and why it does. But it's just, I don't appreciate, it's something I just don't appreciate. And I suppose, I suppose as a woman more than anything, listen to the stuff that comes out of her mouth, I want to hit her. I just want to slap her and say, excuse me. I just want to check for a good, you know, I said, okay, well, I think what I really want to deal with, it comes down to you, dear, is how is it, you're a woman, you have all the same equipment I do. Do you realize that who you're speaking for don't know how to talk to us? We're like weird. And they have no idea. And she talks to them, and you go, uh-huh. It's like they don't even know how to talk to women. I mean, even England is having a problem. I love John Oliver. I love John Oliver's show. He is so funny to me. But he did this thing about this, about, you know, they, I guess they have an election coming up here. and what have you that's happening. And the, I guess it's not the conservative, but the Labor Party, or somebody trying to, you know, include women more. So their answer was to have this bus that is like this hot pink minivan. And I'm sitting there going, really? This is how you're going to talk to women?
Oh, 1960.
I know, because I mean, and he said it, and he, when it, before he even said it, I said to myself, I said, you're giving them a Barbie van? What? and then he said, Barbie van. I said, I'm on the same page as you, because I looked at that and I said, that's a Barbie van. Come on, let's talk about it. That's what it looks like. But that's what, you know, because they don't even know how to deal. So when I see her talking about stuff, I just don't even know what to do about her. So, and sometimes when she's on certain things, I just have to go, okay, I got to back off. I'm going to raise my blood pressure. Let me just get out of here for a minute. Because I will start screaming at the screen like she can hear me.
Yeah, and that's the consequence of taking a strictly ideological approach rather than positive values combined with pragmatism. It alienates people. And then how do you get anything done? How do you get anything done when people are responding with anger? Which, you know, it's an appropriate response when what you're hearing is ugly and nasty.
I have to agree with you. And I think that the idea that really kind of, it bore fruit in the sense that we had, like, the lowest voter turnout since there was a war going on, since World War II, in terms of the voters this last time. I mean, people are actually election-weary constantly. I don't remember this growing up. But now it's like they're campaigning all the time. And I don't know how you deal with it.
Well, I cite some of these statistics in my book, but the last primary election in Indiana, we had a 6% turnout. Yeah, I mean,
okay.
6%. And it was the same day as a Pacer. The Pacers were in the playoffs last year. Same day as a playoff game, sold out arena.
Uh-huh.
So what does that tell you about
exactly.
My Hoosier
Listen,
brethren?
More people
We'd
vote.
Rather watch
it's
basketball
amazing.
Than vote.
Well, you know what? It does solve the riddle as to why people watch reality television, which is not really reality, but all that stuff, because people have got – what they don't seem to understand is that they are actually making people more, you know, just kind of numb to it. We just kind of gotten numb. You after a while, it's kind of like that tune out, that turn it off. And that's why you find more people casting votes for American Idol than you do in an election. Now, that says a whole lot.
Yep.
And that, to me, is crazy.
That's our modern consumer culture for you.
Oh, that's what you got, you know. Now, it wasn't like that when I was growing up, but hey. What do I know? I know that what I do know is I love having you as a guest, and we have gone through our time here, so I want you to take the time to tell people about your website, your books, the things that you're working on, because I've had the privilege of reading that, and I have to say it's something that really needs to come out, and it's got to come out big. It's got to come out big.
Well,
Definitely.
My website is www.jeffreyraisley.com, so they can see the books I've written and the work I'm doing on philanthropy.
Wonderful.
And all the books are available through Amazon and the normal outlets, so hope people will give the website a look and consider the books and also take a look at the philanthropy work we're involved with.
Absolutely. And I think that's a very important thing, is because you're not just walking the walk, you're not just talking the talk, you're walking the walk. And that's rare these days because, boy, we have bullhards like I don't know what. But you are actually doing everything. And I have to, you know, and Jeff, you have been, you're a great guest to have on. And I know that when we come out on the other side, people don't seem to think spring's coming. But, the seasons do change. And it is actually winter. We're still in February, so stop complaining about it being cold. I know it's cold. Nobody's happy about it, but it's winter. Okay, so with 85 degrees out right now, we'd probably be freaking out. The people would be happy, but it'd be entirely too weird.
Well, I'm on my way to Florida, so I'm getting out of the sub-zero weather for at least a few days and hopefully can lie on the beach.
Hopefully the weather has gotten itself, because I heard it got down to 50-something in Key West the other day. I mean,
I
they must have just about died down there for that.
Yeah, they better turn
they don't know
the
how to deal with it
before I get there. That's right.
They're going to have to do that. Believe me, they'll have it on. They don't know what to do. I was in Florida in October one year, and it went to 50-something, and I think I was in St. Petersburg. And they were just, Tampa? I think Tampa. And they went to 50, something like that. They're running around getting blankets, this, that, and the other, asking my sister and I if we want a blanket. We're going, we're from the Northeast. This is what's called sleeping weather in our part of the country. Okay. We're not cold. But... again, I'm going to have you back on as we get into the season, as we get further into the year. If you believe it or not, I'm already kind of like I'm booked into the summer, so I'm going to have you on in the summer. I'm going to find a date for you and put you back and have you back on to talk, because you're always wonderful. And please give my best to your wife, because I can tell her whatever pain she has, I'm feeling it with her too.
It's always a delight to be with you, Charmaine, and I will look forward to it in the summer.
Absolutely, and I want everyone, for our listeners, please visit his website. Please pick up his books. And I'm not saying that I don't get a dime. There's not advertisements and stuff like that. I'm telling you that these books are good, and you'll come out feeling, once you've read them, a lot more knowledgeable, and you'll look at the world differently. And I think that's very important these days. And you'll understand what we really have at stake these days. So, again, thank you, Jeff, for joining us. And I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in. Enjoy Florida, Jeff. And I hope that everyone has a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay healthy. Stay warm if you're someplace cold. And if you're going someplace warm, Have a Mai Tai or something for me, Jeff. I'd like that. That would be good.
I'm picking
have some
you
kind
up
of tropical type of drink. I bet. Have something
good
with an umbrella for me, okay? That would work.
Got it. Just for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But thanks, everyone, for tuning in with us today here on Who You Calling Old. Have a great, great week, and we'll see you next Monday. Take care, all.
Stop the strength.